Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. This week, contributing editor Dr. Teresa O'Halloran speaks with her colleague and our guest, Dr. Rex Feiler of Adams State College, regarding ethical issues in rural counseling settings.
Welcome. My name is Dr. Teresa O'Halloran, and I'm here today with Dr. Rex Feiler of Adams State College to discuss ethical issues in rural counseling. Welcome, Dr. Feiler.
Thank you so much. Enjoy talking to the group today.
Great. So let's begin today by just having you tell me about your background that helps you understand and teach ethics for rural counselors.
Okay. Well, I've been at Adams State College for 19 years, and we're a rural college. We serve counselors in southern Colorado, in particular from the Kansas border to the Utah border. So we've had a lot of experience in talking with and working with those that work in rural areas. I also serve as a board member for our local domestic violence program. I've served as the chair of the Colorado Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and as a member of the Colorado Mental Health Grievance Board. And I'm currently the ethics chair for the Colorado School Counselor Association. And in the past, I was a school teacher and a school counselor in a number of rural schools in Iowa. And so I've had a lot of experience in talking with and learning from people who work in the rural areas. And I'm also licensed as a professional counselor and as a counseling psychologist.
Mm-hmm. You do have a lot of experience, so I'm looking forward to our conversation.
And I guess also I should probably mention that I have taught the ethics course at Adams State for many years now, so that's certainly been helpful.
Great. What do you see as some of the key ethical issues of specific concern for counselors in rural communities?
Well, I think, not surprisingly, the issue of dual relationships is particularly important for those in the rural areas because they are going to exist. You're going to run into clients at your Walmart, at other stores, and so forth. Your family members are certainly going to potentially have contact with those that you work with. You may be a member of a church or a civic group, and your client's also a member. So all of these issues particularly impact upon the person in the rural counseling, where someone in an urban area may never have run into their client in any circumstance. Though there are certain people in urban areas that, because they're members of certain communities or smaller groups, that seem to bring people that might be similar to their clients together, they certainly could experience some of those same type of challenges as well.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like there are a variety of challenges or counselors are called on to act differently mm-hmm. in rural communities. Could you provide me of an example that you're familiar with where it was difficult for a counselor?
Well, I think that sometimes church membership sometimes is a challenge because a counselor can be particularly active in the church and may be asked to teach a Sunday school class. And the nature of the Sunday school class would attract their client. And it could be very uncomfortable. And part of what we recommend is that you think ahead about some of the things that you're going to do. And it may be that you're going to choose to not do something because of that potential conflict. It might be better to volunteer to paint the church hall than it might be to volunteer to be a certain Sunday school teacher, as an example. Mm-hmm. Or I know that sometimes those that work in social services, almost always someone that they're investigating is a friend of or related to somebody that works in the office. I mean, it's 100% guaranteed almost that that's going to happen. So, again, those are challenges that require that the professional clearly understand the boundaries between their social life or their personal life and their professional life. Mm-hmm. And it's a challenge sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I know that the American Counseling Association published some new ethical standards in 2005. And what are some of the changes that really impact rural counselors especially?
Well, the one thing that I'd recommend for all people who are thinking about and wanting to know more about the new Code of Ethics is to read Counseling Today online from October 1st of 2005. They do a really nice job of explaining the changes that take place, particularly the important changes in the Code of Ethics. But when getting back to your question about what were some of the important changes, there's an emphasis on multicultural and diversity kinds of issues that are facing the counseling professional. And while you could argue that that's important for all counselors, in our rural areas, there's a change in demographics that is often taking place, that many of our rural communities, not only in Colorado, but I think in other places, are becoming more diverse. This is creating some challenges for counselors there and for the communities, because maybe it's always been done a certain way, whatever it is, and now they're finding that new people are coming in, and that they have to make some changes in terms of how they provide services, whether that mean that they need to be more sensitive to language challenges and so forth, or just differences in culture and things like that. So I think that emphasis is also particularly important to rural counselors. And there's a section in the new code, it's A5D, and it talks about potentially beneficial interactions, and what it basically is talking about is that there may be opportunities or situations where one might be involved with a client and so forth outside the traditional setting. And I understand the reason for that. It's respecting culture. For example, you might be attending a certain ceremony that is important to your client, and I'm not arguing against that, but I think that that becomes even more challenging for those in the rural communities because the opportunities to be involved with their clients outside the traditional office setting are much greater. And now that this has been added to the Code of Ethics, I think that counselors need, in those rural settings in particular, to think about what this means, because I could see it being misused as an excuse to engage in behaviors that are not appropriate and not what this new change in the Code of Ethics is talking about.
Mm-hmm. So could I pause you there? Because you've said a lot so far about two changes, one of the multicultural focus and the other on the beneficial or non-beneficial relationships. If I could ask a question about the multicultural, or I had a thought about mm-hmm. the multicultural, is that it seems also in rural counseling that a cultural component that needs to be considered is just rural life. If your counselor hasn't been trained in trained in a counselor training center in a rural community, that can really be a shock as well as you work in a rural community.
I think you make a good point there because, for example, you're always even though you have a private life, you're always a public figure in a sense. I know that one of our rural counselors just the other day, in responding to a question about how was it to be a school counselor in two different elementary buildings. And part of her response was, well, I have some credibility because the superintendent knows me. I went to school in the district and he knows my family. Mm. Well, one could argue, well, that shouldn't be relevant to your credibility in your professional setting that someone knows your family. But the reality is that in many rural communities, that makes a big difference to people, mm-hmm. that in a sense, you are unfairly sometimes judged by who your family is, either in a positive way or in a negative way. So not being aware of that can be something that for someone that may come from an area where that's not been part of their life, that can be quite an eye-opener for them in a lot of different ways, because people do know people, and mm-hmm. you're, in a sense, never anonymous in rural communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the second point you're making about the we used to call them dual relationships, and the ACA new guidelines have changed it. I understand your thinking there, that this could be challenging, and also know, especially in this Southern Colorado area, the opportunity or the need to attend maybe a Native American ceremony or a funeral service for a client could be really important.
Yeah, and as you were talking there, one other thing that I thought about, the challenge is not only from the perspective of the counselor, but it's the challenging from the perspective of the client. We know that many times clients confuse the feelings that they experience in counseling with a personal kind of feeling. When you add on top of that the fact that the counselor appears in many settings with the client, or a client experiences a counselor in many settings that in a sense are personal, that the counselor has a maybe even greater obligation to talk with the client about the differences there, because it is going to occur. And if now the counselor, for example, shows up at a wedding, at a funeral, the client could be even further confused and saying, oh, this person cares about me as a friend. We can have a friendship kind of relationship, or even a romantic type of relationship. And without a lot of thought and a lot of preparation on the part of the counselor, the client, I think, can be ill-served because of that.
Mm-hmm. And then what is it you'd recommend the counselor do, maybe after attending a wedding, let's say, where they saw a client there and they just said hello professionally to them, or just in an informal way said hello. And then in their next session, are there some things you think the counselor should follow up on?
Well, I would argue that first the counselor should always, and I emphasize the word always, in working with clients right away, start talking to them about the issues that are going to happen. What happens if I run into you in a different place? What are the boundaries? Because there are still clients, even in a rural area, that would not want a counselor to in any way even acknowledge them in a public place. So the counselor has to help the client realize that I will wait for you to acknowledge me, so that my not acknowledging you is not some type of a put down, or somehow I'm reacting to you in a cold way. I'm respecting your boundaries. Mm-hmm. Then on the other hand, I would also have to make it clear that if we, you know, run into each other buying apples at the farmer's market, that this isn't a place for you to start telling me about the things that we just discussed 2 days before in the counseling session. And then to go back to your idea or example about the wedding, if something happens at the wedding that somehow I can sense that the client might have had a problem with, we definitely need to talk about it. Mm-hmm. An example where we talked about the difference, the challenge of public life and personal life. Well, the counselor could attend the wedding, and maybe they drank a little too much, but not to a point where it was outrageous or anything like that, but maybe they did, and maybe they were a little loud or so forth. That could have some impact upon the client. And so you have to think about that. If I maybe did something that I shouldn't have, or maybe I was a bit inappropriate socially, do I need to share that or talk with the client who witnessed that? You know, those are challenges that sometimes you wouldn't experience in an urban setting, because you don't have to be a perfect human being, obviously, to be a counselor. And yet, even your minor flaws could be on display in a variety of ways. I was thinking back to something you said about some of the rural challenges and so forth. in some rural communities, everybody drives, for example, an American-made truck or car, and then you show up with a very different kind of vehicle. People might look at you. Well, I certainly am not recommending that you base what you buy your vehicles on by where you live and stuff, but somebody could react to you. I mean, there are rural farm families that have always bought a Ford or always bought a Chevy or always bought a Dodge, and they just swear by them, and it's part of their, in a sense, identity and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one other thing that I wanted to mention in terms of the changes in the ACA Code of Ethics that impact everyone, obviously, but a lot more discussion about end-of-life kinds of issues. And in rural communities, death, of course, affects people, and sometimes death affects the entire community because of who it was. It may be a child killed in a car accident or something like that, mm-hmm. that it just impacts everybody in the community, not just those that are directly related to the client. Where in a larger community, a teenager may have been killed in a car accident, and that's certainly tragic. In a rural community, that teen may have been killed, and the impact impacts your client because everybody is talking about it. The client may have a child of a similar age that knew the teen that was killed and so forth. So in a sense, part of the obligation, I think, in particular in rural areas, is you need to know what's going on in your rural community. You need to subscribe to that local paper. Whether it be as we have an Alamosa paper that appears 6 days a week, and it's very, doesn't have many pages, but does cover a lot of local news. Or in some rural communities, you may be wanting to make sure that you get that weekly newspaper, because they cover what's important to that community.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent point about being, you have to be well informed about what's happening in the community to really practice ethically and competently. Well, let's see. I think we talked about this just a little bit, but do you have some specific recommendations for how counselors should deal with the dual relationship so frequently?
Well, one thing that I always tell people is, you know, you're going to meet clients in a lot of public settings. Part of your obligation is to talk to your spouse, talk to your partner, talk to your family about the fact that this may happen, and that you may not explain something to them about some situation, or you may make a request to the family members that you're not going to explain the reasons. An example of that: a number of years ago, I was attending a parade in a small community near here, and I was with my wife, and I looked down the row of people that were watching the parade, and I saw a client, and I realized that for a variety of reasons that it would be awkward if we met in public. So I simply said to my wife, we need to go to the other side of the street. And because she was aware of what I do as a professional, and we'd talked about it, she didn't say, well, why? She just understood that it probably had to do with somebody that I'd run into, saw in the crowd. Or if the client greets you in public, the family member may have to accept the fact that when they ask the question, who is that, that you're not going to answer that. Or maybe the family member is not even going to ask you that because you've explained that to them. Because that can be awkward as well. If the people that are part of your personal life don't understand the boundaries that you're experiencing as well. In addition, they need to be taught about the fact that, well, what do I do if my partner works at the same place as the client, and the client comes up and starts talking about all kinds of things that they have shared with me as the counselor with my partner? Mm-hmm. Well, the partner needs to be prepared for that, because it could happen. So family members need some education as well, or else there are going to be some potentially awkward situations that could create problems for everybody involved.
Mm-hmm. Great. That Yeah, that's important to have it clear in your family.
Let me give you an example of that. Let's say that you're working with a family, and they're not abusive in terms of how they're raising their child. But you, in listening to them, recognize that maybe their parenting style and approach and so forth is one that you probably on a personal level wouldn't raise your child that way. You come home after work, and your fifth grade daughter is so excited because she's been invited to a slumber party at the client's home. Mm. Because she has a daughter that's in. So maybe you know something that says, I don't want my daughter to go there. Well, how do you tell your fifth grade daughter that she can't go to a slumber party? And the real reason is you can't tell her. So that's pretty tough because your fifth grade daughter may not be at a point where she can accept that. And so she may be pretty upset when you, in a sense, say the reason you can't go is because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
Real tough. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, so are there other, we may have covered them all, but are there any other key components in the ethical standards that rural council should pay close attention to that we haven't covered?
Not any more so, I don't think, than those in any setting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I shifting gears a little bit, I know that you're a counselor educator, and maybe you could tell our listeners if there are specific areas you cover in your ethics course or spend more time on because you are training rural counselors.
Well, I do. Again, I think the whole issue of dual relationships is something that obviously we spend a lot of time on. But something else that seems real important. There is often a stereotype out there that rural is somehow not as good as urban or suburban. And you will hear phrases such as, we're isolated in our rural area. But when you hear a phrase like that, you really are making a value judgment. And let me give you an example. I live 120 miles from a mall. On the other hand, last week, on the lawn outside the building where I work, there were 12 deer. Well, I could certainly imagine that many people in urban areas have never experienced that. So who is isolated in terms of of the difference that's there? My commute to work is a 20-minute walk. Big cities have rush hours. We have a rush minute in Alamosa. So again, I'm really emphasizing to everyone, but particularly our students, to not fall into the mindset that because you live in a rural area that this is less than or not as good as, because that mentality can be particularly toxic for people. We're not isolated from some things. I can drive an hour and be in near a mountain stream, which many people spend lots of money to fly to Colorado to do. So don't fall into the idea that somehow you're isolated and therefore less than. You're not isolated. You simply have certain things in your community that may be different than in an urban community, but those are neither better than nor worse than. It's just simply your way of life, and I believe that counselors need to think in those terms, or they can fall into that type of mindset that's not healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems very respectful of the people in the rural community. You know, whether you're a counselor or not, as you work in the community, you're just respectful of what we have in here.
Yeah.
Nice. We've been approaching this idea from the perspective of how the ethical standards are different for rural counselors, or maybe more challenging. Are there some things that that are quite easy, or there's a benefit to being in a rural community when doing counseling?
Well, I think that one of the benefits is that you typically do know the people that are in other agencies and provide support for you. You probably do know the people that are at social services. You probably do know the professional school counselor. You probably do know people at the drug and alcohol treatment program in town. And that sometimes can lead to some very beneficial collaborative relationships because it's easy to do that. I also think that in a lot of rural communities, access to these people can be somewhat faster. A meeting doesn't require, in some cases, a long trip and so forth. And in some cases, a meeting does require a long trip. If you're going to a state conference or a meeting of some kind that involves people from different parts of the state, you're going to make a trip to an urban area in your state and so forth. But I do think that, in particular, the collaborative relationships are enhanced or can be potentially enhanced because of the fact that you know so many people on a more, if I could say, personal relationship.
Interesting. Great. Well, I wonder also if you could share some tips for our listeners for successful and ethical counseling in rural community, maybe as kind of a summary.
Well, I would argue that the tips that I share would be true in any circumstance. One of the most important things in working with anyone is that simple idea of telling them the rules before they play the game. Now, we often say, well, of course I provide a disclosure statement and so forth. But I think that there are a number of ways that we aren't really telling people the rules before they play the game. And, you know, as a child, if we played a game with someone and they changed the rules on us or they told us about a rule that we didn't know, we probably didn't like it. And as part of telling people the rules, it's very important that they understand what you've told them. And it's very easy to fall into what I consider a trap of not respecting someone by asking them if they understand. And the reason I say that is that many of the people that we serve may be somewhat intimidated by the amount of education that we have. If they are asked, do they understand, and they don't, they may view that as a statement on their part that they're not bright, that they're stupid in some way. And so part of what counselors need to do is when they're telling people whatever they're telling them, to find ways about to determine if the client understood them and recognize that if the client didn't understand me, that it's my obligation to do it to explain it in some other way. So I emphasize that in a variety of ways. Continue to tell people the rules. If you're in a meeting in some way that involves a client, it could be a staffing at a school or at a mental health agency, but the client is there or the family is there. It's very easy for professionals to use acronyms or professional jargon. Your obligation as a counselor is to sometimes ask what that means, maybe even if you know, but to help the client realize that it's okay to ask, or to explain whenever these professional terms are being used. And if you find in some of these meetings that some people they're just throwing all kinds of professional language out there that is very confusing to the customer, the client, then later you, I think, have an ethical obligation to say to that person, you know, I know the client was confused by some of the things you said, and then explain to them why you'd like a different kind of language. So that's one of the things that I encourage people to do. Another basic belief I have is to remind people, no matter where the setting is, your client can't give you permission to be unethical. And yet I have seen people, counselors in all kinds of settings, try to use that as an excuse for unethical behavior. As I mentioned at the beginning of our discussion, I served as a member of the Colorado Mental Health Grievance Board. And on a number of occasions, unethical behavior was explained in some way by the counselor by saying, well, the client said it was okay. It's never okay. You are the professional and you have to recognize what the boundaries are. In a related vein, if your boss, your supervisor, orders you to be unethical, that doesn't excuse you. You still have that obligation to be a professional. And finally, a tip or something that I think about is that all of us could experience, let's be candid, a lousy boss, a bad day, or other tough circumstances either in our personal life or our professional life. All of those could explain why you might not give your best performance, but that doesn't excuse you from being a professional. Mm-hmm. Explanations and excuses are two different things. And I always remind people that the client isn't particularly concerned about your tough day. They need something from you, and therefore they have a right to expect your best, no matter what your circumstances are. And if you can't give your best to a certain point, then maybe that's not a day that you should be working. And it's somehow that can get lost on people. The other thing that I also think about in that regard is, in many cases, what you thought was a tough day may pale in comparison to what your client's experiencing. Their tough day is a lot tougher. And so part of being a professional is to maintain some boundaries that are pretty hard to maintain. But part of what we do as counselors is accept that that's part of what we have to do. It's a voluntary experience to be a counselor, and therefore to be a professional is expected no matter what and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, you've shared a lot with our listeners today. I wonder if there's anything else you want to follow up on, anything we've overlooked here?
Well, something that's always important, no matter where you work, is when you are facing ethical challenges, you have to talk to other professionals. The fancy word is collaborate, but you've got to talk to other people. In our rural areas, that sometimes can appear to be a challenge because there may not be, you may be the only school counselor in a K through 12 building that has 120 students. But you can find other people to consult with. And that's, in a sense, to me, one of the most important things that I could leave as part of this discussion is that you need to consult. Karen Kitchener, in an article in the early 90s, talked about the importance of developing an ethical community. In this day of email and internet and all of the things there are ways that we can collaborate with professionals, in a sense, throughout the world without compromising confidential information. So when in doubt, consult. When you don't think you're in doubt, you probably shouldn't consult anyhow, because that may be a sign that you really are missing something. Consult, mm-hmm. Talk to other professionals. It's a lot easier to be smart when you have more than one person involved in the decision or involved in at least talking about the issue.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today about ethical issues for rural counselors.
It has been my pleasure.
You've just heard an interview with Dr. Rex Filer regarding ethics involved with rural counseling. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselaraudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4015. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.